Hi everybody, Kel Weinhold from The Professor is In. A quick note before this podcast, this is a previous episode brought forward from the archives because we think it is relevant to today. So if you notice any discrepancies, in particular the lightness in our voices compared to how they may sound, that's why. And also a reminder that the podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So if you have not become a supporting member of the podcast, we invite you to. You can do that at bit.ly/ourpod, bit.ly/ourpod. And for $3.99 a month, that gives you access to a private community where you can chat with us and watch the podcast live and all sorts of other treats. So I hope you join us. Thanks, and enjoy the episode.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professor is In podcast. This is Karen Kelski.
And I'm Kel Weinhold.
And we are, as always, super happy that you are here with us today. Today is the second in our two-part series of what to do when you don't get the job or the other thing that you thought your future depended on.
So like Karen said, it's two parts. So that means you should listen to the first part before you listen to the second part.
Although we will review.
Of course. Pedagogically speaking, we would need to review.
Yes. But just to reiterate the motivation of doing this topic and doing it in two parts, academic reality, there are very, very few jobs. The vast majority of PhDs do not ever get a tenure-track job. It is the exception to get the tenure-track job. So therefore, the majority of PhDs are dealing with this disappointment of not getting the tenure-track job offer directly and repeatedly. And then again, it's not just jobs, because it's also grants, and especially those funding, federal funding agencies that have acceptance rates in the single digits, like the NIH and so on, you know, 9%, 10% acceptance rates right now, I think, for many, many types of federal grants.
Just everybody just breathe. Don't turn off the dial. I just realize that if you're sitting there like, you're never going to get a job, there aren't any grants, there's only like five places you can ever publish an article, that you might want to turn this off. Don't. We're actually going to give you some tips on how to deal with the reality, because it is the reality. So let's just face it. But let's also talk about some ways for it not to be quite as disappointing and damaging as it feels, maybe as you hear Karen listing them off.
It's my opinion that people appreciate hearing this kind of real talk.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think that we hear that all the time, people talking about everything we do. There was somebody on Twitter just yesterday talking about the value of just clear talk about what's going on.
There have been a couple interesting dialogues on Twitter lately about toxic, well, my contribution to it was to say it's toxic positivity. Basically, you know, insisting on a Pollyanna kind of attitude about, let's just concentrate on the brilliant work that we're doing and ignore all of these unpleasant realities. You know, I think that's ethical malpractice, in my opinion. And so, of course, that's why we do what we do with The Professor is In, not just on the podcast, but everywhere else. Okay, so dealing with disappointment, part two.
Let's just go over the ones from last week quickly in case we didn't make it clear. The total steps are 12 steps, kind of like a recovery from disappointment. We did 6 last week, feeling the feelings. You are not a disappointment. You are disappointed. There's a difference. There are things to learn from it. We really want you to be proud of yourself for putting yourself out there in the first place. It's tough to apply for things, and you did it, and you should get tremendous credit for doing it. When you are in a giant spiral of it's all terrible, grab on and focus on what you do have. And then finally, surround yourself with people who are supporting your well-being, who are looking at the whole picture, and who are not either undermining or toxic positivity.
Mm-hmm. The next 6 on this list, and Kel came up with the list. Is it one that you developed yourself from the Unstuck program, or?
I developed it for the Unstuck program for a webinar that I did that was certainly based on reading different people on the interwebs talking about how to recover from disappointment. So it's an amalgamation of different, everything from, I'm sure, knowing my sources from Psychology Today to Pema Chodron to Forbes.
To AA.
Yeah, AA. And also Harvard Business Review often does really good stuff. And so does Forbes. I know that sounds really weird, but they both have really good, I mean, they're typically talking about a business, like corporate business model, but then again, the Academy is a corporate business model.
Yeah, so good point.
There we go.
Yeah.
Just a little note about these 12 steps. They may seem overwhelming and impossible, and you could be rolling your eyes at both of us and saying, there's no way I can do all those things and it's ridiculous. Just pick one. Just pick one. Start building on your skills.
So the next six that we're going to talk about today are number 7, work on changing your expectations from outcome-based to process-based. Number 8, take a break. 9, get outside your head and do something for others or do something with or for people who are outside of this immediate academic context that is so stressful and traumatizing. The next one, find a small step that you can identify to move forward. Then build up your self-esteem. And we're going to talk about how. We're not just going to, you know, sort of dictate that. And then find, kind of recover some of your energy by connecting with your support team. Yeah, the first one, working on the expectations, moving from outcome-based, which is the natural way of life of the Academy, to being more process-based.
I think this is a hard one for people to grasp because of that natural Academy thing of, and I can almost hear the pushback, but I have to have the article, but I have to have this, but I have to have this thing. You're absolutely right. For your success, if you decide to go up for tenure, you are going to need to publish in some way. The problem is if you focus on the outcome and then every time that something doesn't get accepted, you have a pretty steep fall into disappointment. If you focus on your process, focus on how you put together the article, how you did your lit review. If you spend your energy on your process and getting feedback and getting better, those are what you can control. You can't control whether they accept it. You can do a whole bunch of things to put yourself in the position. So focus on studying and examining and improving your process and not on the what happens.
Yeah, but I didn't get it. Yeah, but they didn't accept it. Yeah, but I got turned down for the job. I'm, you know, those are, like Kel said, those aren't controllable. But, you know, in a way, this is also a kind of a restatement of the one from last week, which is give yourself credit for the effort that you put in and stretching yourself and compare yourself to yourself, not to others, you know, but really just looking at, I did more. I have more than I had yesterday. I have more than I had last week. I can now take some steps to move forward in another direction. And also that the direction, that it can be multiple directions. It can't just be, okay, go back to the grind of the next tenure track job application. Yeah, sure, you can. Or you can decide not to. You can do both. You can say, okay, stay on the tenure track job market, but you know what? I'm also going to start going into the post-academic, non-academic transition process as well. And both of those processes are ones that you can pursue simultaneously and others in addition. So I know it's really hard. It is very, very, very alien to academics to focus on process and not outcome in our productivity fetishism of the Academy. But as a person in recovery myself, I cannot overstate how valuable it is to your mental health and your equilibrium.
Absolutely. And I think that if you focus on your process, if you say, this is how much time I'm going to spend on this, this is how much effort I'm going to spend on this, this is where I'm going to focus my energy, that you can then be able to know when enough is enough. And you don't, if you're always just asking yourself, you know, if it's all based on I did or didn't get this thing published or I did or didn't get this job, we're not looking at the in-between.
Mm-hmm.
So the step number 2 here is take a break. Maybe that should be like step number 2 of the whole thing. Maybe it should be feel your feelings and take a break.
Yeah, I agree.
Or just reorder all these things. Hey, that's a really good point to make. We picked an arbitrary order.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about academics and their desire to get an A+ in everything. This is a random order of things. We ordered them, but it's not a requirement that you follow them in this order.
Mm-hmm. And just like the 5 steps of grief, which by the way, also apply here very, very much. And in fact, that's an interesting topic for another podcast episode someday, the 5 steps of grief in terms of the academic career. But in any case,
most people do rage forever.
Yes. Well, and that is
bargaining.
Bargaining. Yeah. If I just do one more term of adjuncting this time, it'll be different. Denial. Anyway, sorry. We're going off into the the other, into that other future podcast. The point is you don't just go linearly through them either. You cycle back over and over and over through different steps and different stages, and you can cycle back through all of these 12 steps as well. So upshot, yes, take a break. That's vital. Vital all the time. Vital in the academic career, even when you're not confronting disappointment.
And I think this one's really hard mentally, because what we're talking about is taking a break from thinking about it, taking a break from doing it. So a lot of times people will apply for something, not get it, and then crumble and not work for a while, but they don't go through these other steps of feeling the feelings and all that. But I'm actually talking about working on taking a break from letting it whir in your head. So paying attention to when you start obsessing about, didn't I do that right? Maybe I answered that question wrong. Wait, maybe they think I'm stupid, whatever it is. And have an off switch so you can say, I'm just going to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a key way to do that, and that's in step number 3.
Yeah, which is get outside your head. So taking a break, you know, a lot of us, when we take a break from our stressful work, we do it by going onto Twitter or social media and then reading unbelievably stressful stuff about, you know, the fires in Australia and the disaster in the White House. That's not really a break necessarily. You have to be, especially in 2020 in the overstimulated world we live in, you have to be a very careful and conscious curator of your break time, because it can get consumed so easily by these other stressors. So for me, and this is because I work at home, of course, I can spend day after day after day just in the house, not leaving the house. And it's really important to, and I've been shocked at the difference it makes just to step outside and feel the fresh air on my face. It really does take me out of a stress cycle very, very quickly. So go outside. Of course, as you know, I or some of you know, some maybe don't, I dance with a group of women, and I dance 3 or 4 times a week. That clears my head every time without exception. You can't keep perseverating in your head while you're learning complicated choreography and dancing to music and losing yourself in the music and the dance. So those are two fantastic things.
And I also think that you can take a break by making something not about you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, Karen says that to successfully defend a PhD, you have to be incredibly self-absorbed. You have to believe that this thing that you're doing is so important that you're going to focus intensely on it. And so, not surprisingly, it self-selects people who are pretty obsessive and able to focus intensely on something and on their own stuff. And it's the thing I work on in interviews with people to get them to understand how to stop centering themselves so much. So I think we can do that in our recovery from disappointment by going and doing something for someone else. Go take a friend to dinner. Go volunteer at Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. Go do something that actually does not involve or benefit you in any tangible way. To just get out of the loop of your life, your disappointments, your struggles, which we all have, and I'm not in any way dismissing or denigrating them. They're real and it's hard. And one of the more significant stretches of depression that I went through when we were living in the Midwest, and for me, the Midwest was at its core depressing. I volunteered for Habitat for Humanity, and I volunteered in a kindergarten classroom every day teaching kindergartners to read, knowing that teaching kids to read was more important than whatever, you know, wall I was going to be staring at if I didn't. And just to make note, I understand there are different levels of depression and people just getting out of the house, getting out of bed. So I get that. And I'm totally understand that. And I also want to say that getting out of your own head can be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, also putting yourself into direct engagement with people who are really struggling can really put into perspective the seriousness of the thing that you didn't get. I'm not being very articulate right now, but if you're confronting someone who doesn't have a home at all, and that's why the home is being built by Habitat for Humanity, the fact that you didn't maybe get this particular grant or this particular article didn't get published, you know, you might just gain some valuable perspective on how big of a loss that is. And again, I want to just say, we always say this, but you know, this is not to denigrate or shame anyone for the deep disappointment you feel about not about not getting the things that you want in your academic pursuits. Totally understand that. No shaming meant. But just, you know, perspective can also be very helpful. And I don't want to move on without saying that animals are marvelous and that I, in fact, my rabbits are my therapy animals. And that just burying my hands in their fluffy little fur and talking to them and gazing into their blank bulbous eyes.
And, their dull little brains.
Dull little brains. And chasing them around the yard as they frantically try to get away from me is a surefire way to get myself out of a disappointment, a stress cycle.
Right. And I want to go back to one thing before we leave that, that I also understand when we were talking about like sort of get out and other people who are struggling more. I also just want to understand that I know that many, many of you are under extreme economic stress, that many of you are potentially unhoused, that you are in the same situation we're talking about, saying, you know, go volunteer here and you're that person.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Yes.
And I will still argue that service is the best path out of self. It's not self-absorption. Well, it is self-absorption, but that sort of everything is going wrong. Just serving someone else can just lift you a little bit, not always in comparison.
Yeah, totally can. I'm really glad you said that. Absolutely. We should never make assumptions about the financial status of anybody who's listening to us, because one of the great unacknowledged truths of the Academy is how many people are absolutely financially precarious, financially vulnerable, depending on food pantries, depending on food stamps, in an insecure housing situation. And I really, really want to center that all the time in everything we talk about.
Right.
So thank you for saying that. So the next thing is number four. I'm trying not to use number four because it isn't number four. It's like number nine or something. So once again,
we still didn't
number them correctly. Like last week, we got off and we're still off. Find a small step to move forward. And again, this is a little bit another way of saying focus on process, not outcome. So, and sometimes this advice we give to focuses on saying things in different ways because different people hear things in different ways. But it is very, you know, academics are all or nothing thinkers and perfectionists. And it's like, well, if it didn't work out perfectly, then I'm a failure. And it's, no, you can take a small step. You can, you know, okay, maybe you can't start over on a whole massive revision of that article that got rejected, but maybe you could bring yourself to look at the website of another journal and pull up their submission requirements and just look at that. And that's 5 minutes on the website, and then that's it. Just step away. That's all you could do today. That's still huge. Or and it doesn't just have to be in that one linear obsessive path of, okay, this publication didn't work out, then I have to get that publication to work out. It could also be, I didn't get this academic job or a bunch of other academic jobs. I'm going to take a small step in the direction of non-academic jobs, of leaving this, looking at, not leaving, but just beginning to consider the possibility of pursuing the concept of starting the process of possibly learning about what it might take to entertain the idea of leaving the academic career.
I don't know. I didn't know that it was possible to string that many prepositional phrases together. So I want to go a slightly different direction here with the small steps, because I think those are all great small steps you can take when you're ready to engage back with the whole idea of doing another article or applying for another job or understanding what direction you're going to go. I want to encourage you to also take some small steps in self-reflection, in beginning to think about, what do I want this next year to look like? Or what do I want my next application to look like? What do I want the process of my next application to look like? And then start to write that out and say, what would that look like? So sometimes I think that we think of a small step as like, okay, well, the small step, I was going to turn my attention to that grant. which is a massive step. Mm-hmm. And instead, how about tomorrow, the small step I'm willing to take is to jot some notes about what grants I think might be a good idea.
Right.
Maybe I'm going to sit down and do some free writing about, in a perfect world, what would my day be structured like? Because if you keep writing down that perfect world and get it into your consciousness, you can, it's a lot easier to aim for it. Mm-hmm. So
brainstorming,
right.
Blue sky thinking, just free writing. Part of Kells on Stuck program is the morning pages of three, mm-hmm.
300 pages.
300 pages every morning. And it's funny how many academics struggle with that because they're like, well, what is the topic?
What am I supposed to, what is the pages?
The theme. And it's like, that's actually.
Do I have to do it in the morning? Do I have to do it by hand?
Can I type? But it's actually handwritten, right? That's part of the requirement.
Part of the requirement is that it's handwritten.
So it is getting you out of that linear thinking.
If you're physically capable of writing it by hand, a lot of people I talk to, and I certainly experienced this when I first started doing it, that you haven't written by hand in so long, your hand really doesn't, it's hard to do three pages. Mm-hmm. To which I would say, how many pages can you do?
Mm-hmm.
Two. Okay, then do two pages.
Right.
But you said three pages.
Exactly. And that's process, not outcome.
Right.
Yeah. And before leaving this one, I want to say, don't be afraid to be a dork. Academics, we have a lot of ego. Oh my goodness. And there's so, in a shame-based system, you know, how you come across and your sort of sophistication level is judged all the time, really harshly. And you know, you have these colleagues who are always, you know, they only go to the opera. Oh, I don't even have a TV in my house. You know, that all that language, that discourse. And I just want to say that one thing really freeing to me about leaving the academy was the space to be kind of dorky and silly. And just to give an example of something that I think is kind of cool, but yet would be considered déclassé, is to get one of those paint-by-number programs or that you can order now online. You can sign up. And I guess, what, every week, every month? I haven't done it yet, but they send you a paint-by-numbers. And you can choose the picture. And it's really, you know, there's actually kind of a really nice, some of them are really nice-looking pieces of art at the end of it, I suppose, if you do it decently. I have no idea. I haven't tried it yet. But the point is it's literally paint-by-numbers. Also, just this morning, I was read a headline, and I think it was actually in the Washington Post, that Legos is now targeting their marketing towards stressed-out adults. So basically, Legos for adults. And I build weird little models that I get from Japan of traditional Japanese houses that I put together with glue and then paint them, and they're ridiculous little things, and I love them.
You know what my favorite part of this whole thing is? Because I'm inspired to want to start suddenly talking about how much I love paint by numbers as a kid, and I used to sit up in my room and do them all the time as a preteen and teen. But I was just thinking about, we had a production meeting about our podcast yesterday, and at the time that we're recording this, only two have been published. So we're well into it because we try to do several in advance in case something comes up. And so our production person said, so it's kind of hard cutting out all of the digressions. And I realize now that they're going to listen to this and they're going to think, this whole Lego thing, I think it might be a digression because it doesn't have anything to do with find a small step forward.
It's
But it does.
Oh, this isn't a digression at all. This is, if I could just grab our listeners and say, go out and buy Legos.
Right, but how does it fit with find one small step forward? I think it fits with another step that's coming.
Oh.
But it does fit with it in the sense that we want you to find some balance. So it is that, right? Take a small step toward balance.
Mm-hmm.
What's your joy? Mm-hmm. So I can say to you, I saw these paint by number things come up and I thought, oh my gosh, I used to love paint by numbers. I could remember the little plastic cups mm-hmm. and the paint and the way it smelled and what happened when the horse looked like the horse. I loved it. And so,
because at first it doesn't look like a horse. It just looks like some weird gray and brown stripes. And you're like, what is this?
Right?
Yes.
It's like doing that Bob Ross thing.
Yes.
Suddenly it looks like a mountain. So it is a digression because the small steps we want you always to be taking are toward balance.
Mm-hmm.
So finding your joys, finding balance, finding something that feels like moving forward in a way that feels whole.
Mm-hmm.
So for the production folks who are listening, this is not a digression. This is just the way we roll.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, and this actually brings us directly into our next line item, which is build your self-esteem, which is, you know, oh my gosh, there's so many issues with that phrase, build your self-esteem, as in, okay, sure, I'll just get right on that. Yeah, no problem. I just had, you know, got rejected for a job and had an article turned down, but I'll just work on my self-esteem.
Right, and I'm broke and living in my car,
but I'll just get right on that, Karen and Kel. So there's that. And then there's the whole self-esteem discourse and the critique of it and why Americans are obsessed with this concept and what it says about our culture and so on and so forth. Endless. So we have it here and now we're immediately critiquing it. We're critiquing our own language.
Right. We're using it advisedly.
Yeah, we're using it advisedly and basically just saying, you succeed in many, many things all the time in your day. You do. You succeed in pouring a glass of orange juice and drinking it. You succeed in washing a dish. I'm not saying all the dishes. I'm saying one dish. And I'm not assuming that all of you washed a dish today. But if you take a whole list of things, you have all succeeded in some things. And part of what we're trying to get you to think about is look at all the ways you succeed and the ways that you can succeed and build, first of all, recognize them in the present and then build them into the future. As you say, okay, well, tomorrow, here's a thing I know I can succeed on, I can be successful in, and I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to learn, you know, trust myself.
I know this sounds like that old song, the Accentuate the Positive song, and I think that we want to change this to, instead of build your self-esteem, it's resist the negativity bias of your brain, like counter to the negativity bias, and find and pay attention to the things that you're succeeding at. Find them and highlight them. Remind yourself, because you can't learn self-esteem. You can't study a book and have self-esteem. You actually have to be tested and succeed.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when you've just had a major failure, you forget all the other times that you've been tested and succeeded. So I really want to encourage you to quote unquote build your self-esteem by focusing on the successes, just like Karen said. Where are you succeeding? Where can you say, I'm good at that?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the thing you're really good at is effectively stacking the dishwasher,
mm-hmm.
which is no small feat.
Right.
I know by watching people stack the dishwasher in ways that don't work, because there are rules, people.
Who shall remain nameless.
Who shall remain nameless. My brother insists there is a way to do it. There's the way other people do it.
There are a whole blog post. I mean, there's like, in fact, like Kenmore has right. like information about this is how you should correctly stack our dishwashers.
Right. I mean, just saying that's kind of a ridiculous.
And I know that because I looked it up once.
Probably to argue with me about exactly. my insistence on how it goes. But listen, I'm just saying, like, start focusing on what you're really good at. And it's not ridiculous if what you're really good at is getting the laundry done. Every day, all day for a family of four, or I'm really good at coming up with ideas for my articles and I'm really good at getting started on them. And I may not be great at finishing it, but if I focus on the fact that I'm good at it, then I can apply those same skills to finishing it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're accentuate the positive.
Right. Just to come back to the point about depression that you had inserted earlier, I want to reiterate that what we're talking about today are a temporary set of circumstances that you might be confronting and some possible tools to deal with it. But if you find yourself confronting a kind of incapacitation day after day, week after week, that could be a sign of depression. Depression is absolutely rampant in the academy. And yet it is, we still don't have a safe space or a way, a language to talk about it. It is shrouded in shame. All mental illness is in the academy. And if you feel that might apply to you, I just want to acknowledge that it's a reality and that you can get help by going to see your doctor, possibly getting medication, going to a therapist, finding a place to talk it through. So those are other things to absolutely consider as you're dealing with this.
And then our 6/12 / whenever you get to it step, because
mm-hmm.
we are all about the quantitative process here at the Professor's Inn. We keep order. Is a little bit related to the self-esteem that we were talking about, is to find that energy and motivation by engaging with others. So we left that last week as the kind of find supporters. And this is the advanced version of it, right? So you find your supporters And then it's about getting those people around you that you can use energy with or key off of and say, okay, let's get started. Okay, how about, you know, maybe it's just a check-in. Maybe it's a competition, a tiny little fun competition.
A friendly competition.
Friendly competition, right? Not that you're going to get stressed out about.
Or accountability buddies.
Okay, yes. As our rabbi calls them, accountability buddies. But fine.
And they don't have to be in town either. They can be across the world because Skype and email or whatever allow you.
WhatsApp.
FaceTime, WhatsApp allow you to say, okay, we're going to do a 15-minute writing time every single day. And it's going to be my morning, your evening, and we're going to check in by whatever, text. Mm-hmm. And then 15 minutes later, we're going to have a little debrief and we're going to be done.
And I think it's so important to not depend on yourself for all of your motivation and energy. If it's just always you having to pick up yourself again and your disappointment and put it all in your little bag and march forward again, it just gets really exhausting. So if you have other people around you who are on a similar path in some way, they don't even have to be academics. Maybe one of you is trying to run a marathon and the other one's trying to finish the dissertation. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of you is trying to finish painting your living room and you've only gotten a quarter of the way finished and got distracted. And maybe you're trying to finish an article. What if it's people who are trying to meet goals, join together and use each other mm-hmm. for that. It's just a tremendous asset.
It'd be kind of fun to sit down with your laptop and work on your article while your friend was painting the living room. Right. And so it was like, no talking.
No talking. You paint.
I write. And at the end, we have a glass of wine or whatever. Whatever feels good.
Right. But there's a thing called Meetup. It's an app. And all over the country, all over the world, there are meetups called Shut Up and Write. Mm-hmm. And they are basically where you just go, you introduce yourself, and you sit down and you write. And they're remarkably energizing. I find it strange. I found it really strange when I went to a few of them and hosted a few of them, how energizing they were. Mm. It was just like, oh, look at you all writing. I can write. So use that energy.
Peer pressure. Use it well. Organize your own peer pressure. Like,
okay, I'm not going to call it peer pressure.
Works.
I was not talking about peer pressure.
Well, but I just was thinking, like, if I were sitting in a room full of people who had agreed to come sit and write and they were writing and I wasn't, that would be full on peer pressure. I'd be like, damn, I better start writing something.
Okay, well, that gets into external motivation. What I'm talking about is look at all this creative energy.
Oh, okay, whatever.
Let's... And here we are at the crossroads of belief.
Right. Okay.
Don't do it because they'll judge you. Right. Do it because it brings you joy.
Okay, so to reiterate, we now have our list. Just to run through them real quick as we're wrapping up. When in the face of disappointment, and this is in no particular order, and you will do them in whatever order is good and move in and out amongst them moving forward, you will feel the feelings, not suppress the feelings. You will remember that you are not a disappointment just because you are currently disappointed.
You will find energy and motivation from and with the help of others. I threw Karen off because I started at the bottom of the list just to mess it up.
All right. You can learn from it. As painful as that is and as hard as it is to confront rejection from granting agencies or jobs, there are mechanisms, both formal and informal, for learning from that process and coming out of it with additional information. Be proud of yourself for stretching. That's a core. That's one that Kel really brings into the equation, which is you did a thing. Mm-hmm. Stop and give yourself credit.
You did a thing. Celebrate the thing. And you can use that thing to do that other step of building your self-esteem, mm-hmm. to say, no, I actually did it and was tested. I did it. Mm-hmm. And if you watch that process, that's how you do that. That's how you build your self-esteem.
Yeah, that's true. Find a small step to move forward, and you can have several small steps at the same time in several different directions of moving forward toward different sorts of goals in those processes. So those are things you can do. An example of that is just get outside of your head by doing service work for others or engaging with animals or doing stuff like exercise or crafting, knitting, all of those things that get out of your cognitive brain.
Mm-hmm. And that leads to one of the other steps, which is refocusing on what you do have rather than focusing on what you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what would happen if everybody who ever listened to this podcast devoted 1 hour a week to volunteer work that had nothing to do with them.
Mm.
I can hear many screaming, I don't have time, and the mm-hmm. others saying, I already do. But how about mm-hmm. how about everybody in between?
Yeah.
And you do have time. You're choosing it to do different things with it.
But I might have to cut my obsessive social media scrolling. I don't know that I can do that.
How can I give up that hour on Twitter where I'm screaming at the Republican Party?
Right. Take a break. That is one of our line items and maybe possibly the most important one, honestly, in this world that we live in.
And so fitting, right? Following the obsession mm-hmm. with social media and all of that. Everything we're talking about is switching your expectations from outcome to the process.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on the process.
Yeah. And I do believe the last one, number 12, is that you have a team around you
mm-hmm.
that you've collected and you can keep collecting over time. And the membership of that team may shift as your priorities shift and your values shift. But that when you have supporters around you who really do support you and don't undermine you and feed the negativity bias, but they can be just an absolutely crucial resource, you know, keeping you motivated, comforting you when you're down, engaging in friendly competition with you. And again, remember, they don't have to be academics. They don't. Although I guess, having said that, we do know, we are fully aware of how hard it is when you're in the academy to get anyone to understand what you're going through. When you say you didn't get a job and they're like, well, then just get another job.
Right. Just go down the street and get that one at that university down the street.
So we get it. So the upshot, as we always give you at the end of every episode, the upshot is disappointment is part of the game. Disappointment is interwoven into the very fabric of the academic career from grad school onward. It is normative to not get the job you applied for. It is normative to not get many of the grants you apply for and to get rejected some of the time in your articles and so on. So the key is to building resilience.
And it takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
So start small. Start small.
All right. On that
See
note.
See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
One last note here. This podcast is made possible every week by the exceptional work of our editor and producer, Stephanie Blair. If you happen to need audiovisual work, be sure you go check out baddieblair.com, BaddieBlair.com. And also, I encourage you to check out her phenomenal home decor and apparel designs, and you can check those out at chochochen.com, chochochen.com. As always, Stephanie Blair, we are grateful for your incredible talent. Thank you.